welcome to Microbrew, the trade deadline episode. It is here. It is beautiful. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Guess who's with me? You know him. It's Kurt Hogue, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was there on Sunday as the Milwaukee Brewers wrapped up kind of an uneven week, but they got the job done on Sunday. Walk-off fashion, Blake Perkins with the game-winning single. We say single in air quotes because the man hit it to the wall. Kurt Hogue, if you are... He's also showing off his bobblehead, like his custom-made Kurt Hogue bobblehead, which is baller. Like, it is so good. I don't know. Can you give me the story on this bobblehead? Like, you have a bobblehead.
I should post this on Twitter or wherever. It's from Northwestern Mutual. They sent an email out a couple months ago saying they're trying to advertise for, I guess, a new advertisement they have, and they're offered to make a customized bobblehead. And I said, I have no idea what this means, but I don't say no to free things. And so they sent it, and I'm like, that's literally me. That is a better caricature of me than just about every single bobblehead I think that the Brewers make. So pretty awesome. Shout out to Northwestern Mutual for hooking your boy up. I believe Todd got one as well. I don't know if any other Brewers media were involved in this, but
I wasn't. I didn't get no bobblehead.
They should. They could have made a beautiful, bald, stout.
Stout is key. Do you know how many times I hear from somebody being like, oh, I saw somebody that looked just like you? Because I got to tell you, us rotund, short, bald, bearded men, they everywhere. We are a dime a dozen. Let me tell you, you could make a bobblehead of me and ascribe it to so many different individuals on this green earth. It is it's an easy face. That's all I got to say. I have an easy face. I think I just coined a new term.
I've never heard anyone describe their face as easy, but
as bobblehead making goes.
You, my friend, have done it. An easy face. I guess, like, yeah. If your kid's in 4K, right? And it's like, draw your mommy and daddy. It's like, well daddy's easy. Here's a circle.
With a smiley face and a beard. Yeah. And make sure his body is also a circle. That's the key to making a perfect JR if you're in 4K. You know, I'm looking at my bobblehead shelf. The Jackson Churio one from either last year, had to be last year. It would have been last year. That one really looks like him. That's one of the better, you know, face matches that we have in the Brewers bobblehead cadre. There's a lot of good ones, but
the Devin Williams World Baseball Classic one.
Oh, it's so
that's
good.
Really I'm looking, good too.
He's looking at me right now from over the shoulder of a Willie Adames, giving that, I forgot what that gesture was called, but like
claws up, baby.
Yeah, claws up. That's what it was. Yeah. It doesn't really, to me, look like Willie, but Devin, looking over his shoulder, absolutely does. We were going to talk about the Brewers. It's trade deadline season. Kurt, I was in Iowa this weekend. I missed so much. I missed this home run derby on Friday, which was just awesome. I can't wait to hear your take on it and your recollections of it. Really want to bring that into the fold. I was in Iowa at the Field of Dreams with my son at their baseball tournament, so missed a lot of the action, but the Brewers did not fare all that well against the Marlins. They did win on Sunday, like I said, for a 3-3 week. Their winning streak was snapped on Tuesday, one win shy of Burgers for All. The George Webb Burger promotion comes so close to triggering. Instead, we had to settle for just 11. And then the Brewers had just a kind of a mediocre week, but they're still tied for first place in the National League Central. They have the best record in the National League alongside the Chicago Cubs. They are one game behind the Blue Jays for the best record in baseball. They are still sitting very pretty. And it's July 27th, July 31st. That's Thursday. Big day. It's the trade deadline. That's where we're starting. That's what we got to say. I do have an interview with Robert Murray, our old friend Robert Murray. Join me for a conversation. National baseball writer Robert Murray, Wisconsin native, to talk about trades. This is his favorite time of year. This is the time of year where he shines. He's got some intel, some insights. I really enjoyed talking to him. That conversation is coming up. So we'll spend time on the trade deadline here, but even more coming after we're done with everything else. Kurt, I need names. That's our annual quest. We need names. We need to know who the Brewers are going to trade for.
First off.
Yes. Yes.
Did you know that Robert Murray went to high school, was, I believe, in the same graduating class, maybe a year before, but I think the same class, as one of my college roommates?
I did not know that. I would not have that information handy, but that is a revelation. Fantastic. Is this the same college roommate who is now in the Blue Angels? Because that blew my mind.
No, I had see it cheating a little bit. Less with the Blue Angels roommate because he was my freshman roommate and then my junior and senior roommate. But there were 11 of us in a house. So it's cheating a little bit. I can cast a pretty wide net with it.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, high school with Robert Murray leads to some good stories.
That's interesting. We could talk more about that. Broshen's 11, fantastic college pod that you had with your buddies. This is like, I have a friend who has just a million cousins. Shout out to Mike, you know who you are. And so he's always starting a sentence with, well, my cousin did this. It's like, seriously, your mom and dad both had like 12 siblings. Everyone is actually your cousin. So it's sort of just a general, it's really, again, it's just how he starts sentences, because I have no idea which cousin it is, because there's like 75 of them, literally, maybe more. I don't even know. You could say the same thing about your roommates. All very interesting folks, I gather. Trade deadline is upon us. 4 days away.
That's right. That's where we were. Yep.
The Milwaukee Brewers need a bat. And if that wasn't abundantly clear, even through the midst of this really good winning streak, and they have won so many games, I cannot dispute that they have found a way to win games. They have gritted and grinded their way to just about every good break that you can muster. They made their own luck. They have done great work. They have great pitching, and they've done enough on offense to get through to this point in the season where they are one of the best teams in baseball. But at some point, you got to have somebody who brings home the bacon. They need a masher, especially for when the playoffs roll around. They need somebody who can slug. They do not slug this baseball. If you look at the last 10 years, the teams that win the World Series, they're all top 10 in slugging. All of them, most of them, are top 5 in slugging. You know where the Brewers are? They're 23rd in slugging. That's not going to get it done. And even if you go all the way back to 2000, you're not going to find anybody who was ranked 23rd in slugging who won the World Series. That is a rough data point. Probably not something we could spend a lot of time on. But the Brewers need to slug the ball more, in my opinion. And I am curious to know, Kurt, who you think this team could go get, will go get. What will their style be? Is this just another trade deadline where the Brewers improve around the edges? Is it something different? I honestly have no idea. We've already seen some player movement. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you hearing as the Brewers get closer and closer to this deadline?
It's always interesting, JR. It's always interesting because you see the Brewers' recipe, and right, it clearly works. They are almost 20 games over 500. They have tied for the best record in the National League. That over 100 something games is clearly something that works. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it time and time again where this happens, where the recipe, it clearly works. And sometimes, as they do this year, they even have an offense that scores runs. This offense is, I believe they came into today, 8th or 9th in all of baseball in runs scored. That's a pretty good number. That's a very good number. You would say that's a good offense. But I am very hesitant to say that this is a good offense. I think it's a functional offense. I think they have an identity. I think they have guys that put together really good at bats, and I think they have Jackson Churio. That's what I think this offense is. That is not enough to win a World Series, especially with this version of William Contreras, and we're like many months into the slugging continuing to go down, as opposed to, you know, maybe you thought if that finger ultimately heals up and he hits for power, that changes your lineup. It certainly does. But I think we're probably past the point there of expecting him to be more than a league average hitter that he's been this season. So yeah, the Brewers need a slugger. They absolutely need a slugger. It gets interesting when you start talking about what you have to give up to get that slugger, obviously. But this, I would think, JR, is the year where if you are going to not go all in, probably not smart to ever go all in, but maybe give up a little more than you normally would, you should do it because you have the pitching depth. You have a clear pitching development pipeline going on at the big league level. Chris Hook's here on a multi-year deal. You kind of look forward to the future a little bit, and you have lots of really good arms. You could even keep Freddie Peralta for next year if that's what tickles your fancy. You could maybe sign Brandon Woodruff for next year if that tickles your fancy. Probably should tickle your fancy if you're the Brewers. That would be a good thing to do. This is the time, JR. This is the time. They have guys who have hit pretty well. Isaac Collins has hit well. William Contreras is at league average. Bryce Terang and Sal Frelick are hitting the ball pretty well, but they don't have slug outside of Jackson Chourio and then Christian Yelich when he's hot, because he's kind of an enigma. I feel like this year with how his stretches are either very, very hot or very, very cold.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Chourio's awesome. And I guess, like, right now the Brewers are facing a pitching logjam to the point that it kind of looks like Jose Quintana, of all people, is going to be the odd man out in the rotation, despite pitching competently, very well, but not anywhere close to the other five guys that they're going to be able to offer when Nestor Cortez is healthy. And we'll talk about that. But they are so overflowing with pitching that they have to make some just really tough choices here. Chad Patrick is in AAA, you know, like that would not make sense on most teams. At some point you have to cash that in. If this team is going to be this team, and we know they are, that doesn't want to spend big on free agents, you have to dive in at this halfway point, past halfway point, but where you don't have to end up spending a lot of money. You can get a guy for just two hot months and you've built up this incredible cadre of talent, including on the pitching staff, where you can offer something in return. But also, before we kind of really dig into what players might be available for return, you have to figure out what slugger are they really looking at, or what slugger would they be looking at. And the obvious name is Eugenio Suarez. I cannot say that name.
I was just gonna say, what's his name?
Yep. Suarez.
Eugenio Suarez, bobblehead, right?
Is that right?
Right up there. Oh, that's right up there. Can you see it? Yep, he's right there.
He's the guy everybody wants. And really, when you look at the list, there's way more pitchers available, seemingly, quote unquote, available, than there are hitters. And if the Brewers aren't getting Suarez, because everyone's going to want Suarez, and I got to tell you, I don't think Suarez is going to be their guy. I just, for a couple reasons. One is that I just don't know if I believe that he's going to be, you know, if this is truly sustainable for what he's been doing this season. Another is that I'm not sure third base is their biggest opening. Look at you, Suarez. Look at you, Bobble. Very nice to come down off the shelf. A rare non-Brewer Bobble on your collection. That's fantastic.
I got some good ones up there.
Yeah, that's great. Good for you. I have a couple non-Brewers. Mostly I don't keep those. I don't need them. I think I have Brett Saberhagen down there. That's weird. Cale Durbin has done enough at third base where it's like, they got other needs, man. First base, what's going on with that? Well, Andrew Vaughn's doing pretty well, so that's obviously something that they have to think long and hard about. What about the outfield? You mentioned the guys out there who are doing fine. Isaac Collins, Sal Frelick, certainly Chourio. But you need some slug, and that might be a place to find it. You know, maybe you sort of send, I mean, Isaac Collins, as good as he's been, he's certainly been everything you'd want. You can find more at bats for somebody that you bring in from the outside in the outfield. It is a challenge to kind of isolate in on a guy, because it's either Suarez, who's the guy everybody is talking about, who's also 34 years old, and I just don't think the Brewers are going to get into that sweepstakes. It's either him or kind of a lot of other names that aren't that interesting. So do you have guys that are obvious? If not Suarez, if not him, because I really just don't know if I buy that the Brewers are going to go in on that. Who are the guys? Is it a shortstop? I mean, who are the guys that they should realistically be chasing?
It's not, I mean, the issue is that it's not really a shortstop, because there are not shortstops.
That's right.
It's interesting to see the Brewers this week, late in games, they've maneuvered their infield around. And typically they just brought in Andre Monasterio to, you know, when see someone pinch hits for Ortiz, it's usually just Monasterio that comes in. But they have played Terang and Durbin there now. Murphy has said that he's just messing with everyone, and there's a strategic reason that involves keeping Mona available as a pinch runner, to which I say, that's a lie. You did it twice this week. Something's up. I'm calling it out. Something's up.
But Andrew Monasterio is not a fast runner. He's not being saved as a pinch runner. He's not a fast runner.
And we still have not gotten a great answer on the viability of Bryce Terang at shortstop. I think right. there's a lot of talk around whether trading for Eugenio Suarez would be, and him specifically, would be worth it. And we have not talked about who's going to play shortstop, because Bryce Terang's shoulder kept him from playing shortstop this season. It flared up late in spring, and as of last month, it was something that was still talked about as like, yeah, it's still it's still something that bothers him. It's hindered him a little bit. So can he play that position every day for 2 months, making the throws? Like, are you comfortable? Are you confident that he will stay healthy? If you are sliding, you have to maneuver the pieces and Caleb Durbin's got to play, certainly over Joey Ortiz at this point. And he would go to second if you do acquire Suarez. I'm curious to see if they can pull something off for a guy with multiple years of control. There's not a ton of those guys on the infield. I don't know how many years Ramon Urias has left. That's one name that isn't super sexy. And that's the problem with this trade deadline class, JR, is this would be a good year for the Brewers to have to add on the edges. Like, if you had two all-star hitters and you just could use an Eduardo Escobar or someone around the edges. There are those guys. There's Willy Castro. There's, I don't know, Yandy Diaz. Well, maybe Yandy Diaz actually would be a significant upgrade.
Yeah, maybe.
There's Pavin Smith. But there's only really one Eugenio Suarez. Ryan O'Hearn is the other name.
Yeah, he's the next best thing.
Yeah, and the Brewers are certainly going to be involved in the first base market and try to maneuver the pieces around some other way, which would it'd get tricky at a point, but that's the market where they're going to be involved. And there are some names there. I mentioned Yandy Diaz if the Rays choose to trade. Unclear what they'll do. Ha-Seong Kim, maybe as a shortstop, but also he's got a
injured.
He's got. Is he injured? Hurt again?
I thought so. Maybe not.
He came back, but he's also got money tied to him next year, and the Brewers were clearly scared enough by the medicals that they didn't go after him this winter. So it's an interesting class where I think at the very least they've got to go get at least two upgrade bats for the bench. Outfield could probably use another body at this point. They're okay out there, but you could probably use a little more coverage.
Yeah, Ha-Seong Kim's been on the 10-day injured list, hasn't played in a week. This pitching staff, you know, it makes some sense because they have this logjam that I mentioned that they would trade from the pitching staff. I mean, if there isn't room for both Jose Quintana and Nestor Cortez on this roster, logically you could try to move one of those guys. The problem is they're just 1 year players, you know, they're rentals for anybody. And I don't know if anybody is going to, you know, really deliver anything of straight consequence for a guy like Nestor Cortez, who's been injured all year, or Jose Quintana. So I don't know who they would trade from their pitching depth. You know, Logan Henderson, as great as he was this year in four starts, I would not like to see the team part with him. But it feels like he's probably one of the top end guys that they would be able to move. Are there other guys on this staff that you think, or this big league depth that they have, that they could trade from? And I guess the bigger question is Freddy Peralta. I asked this of Robert too, if there was any scenario where you thought on the table where they could deal Freddy Peralta. No. He is the ace of their staff. No. I don't think so either. I don't think so either. But it sure would make sense that if you believe in that depth, that you would trade a guy who is closest to free agency and who is potentially, you know, like going to fetch the most to upgrade in a couple areas. But that does seem like a reach. It seems impossible at this point. They're just too reliant on him. He is their best player, really.
Yeah. I think this iteration of the front office cares too much about the clubhouse. It's something that Matt Arnold and company take more into account. And also, like, I just don't think you're going to get blown away for Freddy Peralta. I just don't think teams are going to do it. I just don't get the sense that he's having a great year, and maybe they should, but I don't get the sense that anyone is lining up to overpay for Freddy Peralta right now. They're not going to do it. They're just not going to do it, and they should not do it. There's a whole nother conversation to be had about this offseason in Freddy, whether you let it ride Willie style. I think there's a pretty good argument to be made for that with Freddy next year, but we also understand that this is the Brewers and we know how they operate. And so they could keep restocking and stockpiling the farm system. But no, Freddie for now will be a Brewer after the deadline, unless the most shocking thing in the world happens and someone offers up the whole farm. They have lots of pitching depth outside of that. Like a Craig Yoho could be someone, Tobias Myers, sure. Chad Patrick. I mean, all these guys have to be on the table if you're the Brewers, because clearly you have been able to turn out above average arms. It's just what you do. You do it with Quinn Priester. Jose Quintana should not have the numbers he has this year, but he does. Chad Patrick might still lead all rookie pitchers in F4, maybe, which might make that might be a good reason to sell high on him.
I agree with that. It's just crazy that they would be in a position to move starting pitchers. Like, that's a really rare opportunity. And It just feels like the trade market doesn't line up for them because there aren't a ton of hitters available. It's all more pitchers. It's all guys that theoretically they don't need.
It would have to be for Suarez. You are Agreed. Not giving up Chad Patrick or Logan Henderson, probably even Tobias Myers, for really? Anyone that is not the best bat on the market. In my opinion, you're not going to give it up for O'Hearn. You will not give that up for O'Hearn.
Really? Okay. I don't mean all three of those guys. You wouldn't give up. You don't think the Brewers would give up one of those guys in a deal for O'Hearn?
No.
Wow. Okay. Well, then I feel like it's going to be like any other deadline, that there's not really the difference, I would say, in this year versus the past years is not so much that they're much better than other teams. It's just that, like, by virtue of their record being so close to the best in baseball, it just shows baseball is full of parity this year. It's a pretty, there's a very slim difference. There's a couple who truly have nots, and then everybody else who's kind of in the mix here.
And I mean, the thing that I think people also need to remember is that the MO of this front office is to not make a splash move. It is to be prudent.
Yes.
And
it has worked for them.
Like the Brewers are good for a reason, because they keep everyone, because they don't trade these guys. Because 2 years ago at the deadline, they don't see Wilson Contreras or whatever and go, okay, here's Mizorowski. They don't do that.
Right.
And it's a little prospect huggy, and who knows, maybe it is one of the things that ultimately keeps them from getting over the hump in this era. Maybe, but it's also part of the reason that they keep getting back to the dance. And I think back to Matt Arnold's first press conference when I asked him, like, what do you think your style is going to be, like, going after free agents, making trades? And he said opportunistic. And I was thinking about that recently, and that's kind of actually how they've gone about it. They've been willing to do it, but mostly it's been when they're really, really confident in something. They were really confident in Priester. They were really confident in Contreras. Even though maybe the math at the time, like, wasn't super great, they felt super, super confident making that move. So what is the move that maybe they feel really confident in at this deadline? Which guy from their top 8 or 9 or 10, at least publicly, do they feel most hesitant or skeptical about? I can't answer that. You probably have the guys that you would say. I have the players I would say. Fans have the players they would say. Maybe that ultimately leads to a more of a splash move. This is the team for a splash move. They need a big bat. You know it. I know it. The fans know it. We'll see. Yeah.
Two homers in the last 6 games. They went 3-3.
It's not enough power.
One of those homers is in a 7-3 game in the ninth inning. All homers are created equal. I don't want to get into leverage homers or whatever, but, like, you got to hit more homers. And granted, Seattle, you know, it's tough to hit homers in Seattle, I suppose, but, like, you got to have somebody who's driving in these runners. It can't all be singles and errors and putting pressure on the defense, which, hey, that has, again, regular season, they have perfection. They have figured out how to make that work for them. It works in the Seattle series. It just isn't going to be enough once you get into the biggest and baddest matchups of the year. And that's what happens under the bright lights of the postseason. So we will see a couple other things. Again, more from Robert Murray after this conversation. So we'll keep talking trade deadline at that point. But a couple other things. Brandon Woodruff, man. He's incredible. Two starts this week. The Brewers won both. He has been so money. And you know, like, I think we've said this before, there's probably still even a little more to go before he's really 100% or anything approaching it. But the way that he battles, the way that he gets through, I mean, truthfully, the Brewers should have lost on Sunday. They gave up a ton of base runners. They had to work out of jams. Brandon Woodruff just knows how to pitch. He just really does. I sometimes think that terminology is a little overrated, but it I don't know if it is. Like, he really truly knows how to pitch, and he knows how to keep this team in games, which is exactly what they did. And then the Brewers got some late heroics on Sunday. You know, Monday he was very sharp, very, very sharp in Seattle. Do you, Kurt, think should the Brewers offer him some sort of deal for the next couple of years? I mean, they obviously have this goodwill, which is why he came back for 2 years. Yes, right? Should.
Yes, this is a no-brainer in my mind. You're seeing what Brandon Woodruff is capable of now at this version of him, and it's not – there's maybe, like – I don't know. It's not – he's not a 2 ERA guy. But, like, there's not smoke and mirrors to making this happen. It's – the results are pretty real. Absolutely. It's Brandon Woodruff. He's a legacy player for your franchise. He matters a lot in the clubhouse. He matters a lot in the community. Like, it checks all the boxes. And that's a guy too, who I don't know what position he's going to feel like he needs to put himself in or his family in. That's right. Totally his decision. You know, if you want to go get the best deal, you should go get the best deal, because this might be your best final chance. But the Brewers should absolutely get involved in this. And I have a feeling they will be involved in it too. It just ultimately will boil down to what Woody's looking for, how close to the market the Brewers are willing to get. Because someone would pay more than the Brewers will. Kidding me? This, like, Brandon Woodruff, who's never been anything but great as a pitcher, and he's only going to, like, his stuff's only going to keep getting better. Someone should pay a lot for that. But if the Brewers can sweep in with 360, or maybe he wants like another, it doesn't seem like it would make a ton of sense, but another high annual value 1 year deal, and then maybe then cash in again after that. Maybe that's in the consideration too. But this should be one of their top priorities this offseason, which I did not expect to say. Did not expect to see Brandon Woodruff through 4 starts, having 3 of them be quality starts, 2 of those being like dominant quality starts.
Do you remember, this is a name, well, this is a name near and dear to your heart. Of course you remember Josh Gosser, the Wisconsin Badgers point guard.
I almost corrected you.
Oh yes, I know, because, well, we could talk about Robert Gasser too, who made his first his rehab appearance.
We've reverse formulated our brains.
No, because they need more starting pitching options. Robert Gasser is.
I forgot about him. Yeah, we haven't talked about him.
I know, right? I don't even. He threw one inning for Wisconsin. He gave up a couple runs, got hit kind of hard. I mean, there's still plenty of road back before he's back pitching for the Brewers. But let's not rule that out for September. That's an interesting thing. But anyway, Josh Gosser, same last name, different pronunciation. He of course had that major knee injury, the ACL tear that cost him a full season, but put him in position to be available to them when they made back to back runs to the Final Four. He still had eligibility left for when they were headed to the to the championship game. And that's kind of how I think of Brandon Woodruff. Like, this injury, it's not a blessing in disguise, because he would have really helped them last year, I'm sure.
And 2 years ago.
Yeah, right. 2 years ago. I mean, theoretically, he would not have been here for either year. He wouldn't have been here. Yes, the real loss, of course, is 2023. He would not have been here in 2024 under normal circumstances, we assume. He would have gotten a major free agent contract. But having him here now is such a sort of strange blessing. And it's going to make their rotation that much crazy good, you know, that much more excellent. They've been stumbling on my words there, but he's been truly excellent. Speaking of starters who are excellent, we saw Jacob Mizorowski this week. That was the game that ended the Brewers' 11-game winning streak, a loss to the Seattle Mariners. But Mizorowski did not factor in the decision. It was 0-0, though, when he left the game in the fourth inning. He was long gone. The Brewers showing some of that conservatism when it comes to managing Mizorowski's workload. He had, I would say, some trafficy innings. It was not super clean through the first 3 innings. It was okay. He had one pretty good inning, if I recall. I think it was like a 9-pitch inning or something. But he started racking up some pitch count, and Pat Murphy made the move to take him out of the game early. Sounds like that was the plan. Seems like that's the obvious idea here, because he is on track to go well over any sort of innings load that he has had before. He's never thrown 100 innings in a season. And he's certainly on the cusp of that now. What do you think this is? What does this plan look like in your mind? Is it going to be starts like this where they turn to the bullpen after four, maybe five if things go cleanly? Is it going to be skipping starts? Is it going to be maybe we just shut him down for 2 weeks, send him back to AAA? You wrote at jsonline.com that going back to AAA is not really on the table, which I guess would kind of surprise me because you hamstring your roster if you're not willing to at least dabble in that and then bring him back for the big stuff at the end. What are you thinking with Jacob Mizrowski? What would the plan be, would you imagine?
Well, no, you can't send him down at this point. That would be malpractice.
I mean, it would be strange, but if the Brewers were abundantly transparent about this is just to get him some rest so he can work like a couple two-inning stints, sure. And then he's coming back in 3 weeks. Just wait for it. I mean, you could do that, I guess.
You could pull that off, I suppose. I mean, like, I would understand it too, but you can't. You can't do it. There is a plan being formulated. I do not believe there, from what I'm told, I do not believe there is a plan that is fully set yet between Miz's side and the Brewers as to, look, here's the hard innings limit, here's the hard pitch count, because they're not, they want to avoid a situation where it's a hard count. They want him to be available and fully ready to go for throughout the entirety of October, and not right. Like three innings starts, like go up, throw five innings, go throw six innings, you know, that sort of situation. And so that also entails keeping him on a schedule, keeping him stretched out, all of these things. And you have to find a way to do that while not stretching him out too much, while limiting his innings. Like, these are conversations that are going to get finalized in the coming days and weeks and things like that. They're not going to send him down. The plan is to keep him as a starter. From everything that I have heard, they want to keep him in a starter role, which obviously that would impact Quintana or Cortes, one of the two. They are choosing Mizrowski as a starter over both of those, and as a limited starter in terms of innings, but that is just the A1 priority for the Brewers right now, as it should be, according to what I'm told. Obviously, they haven't said this publicly yet, but expect Miz to stay as a starter. You'll just have to probably keep him around that 130, 140-ish total innings mark, and then let it ride in the postseason. There's going to be no Strasburg effect here.
Mm.
He's going to pitch in the playoffs. They just need to be smart about it.
Could he be a reliever in the playoffs? So your three-inning hammer at the back of a game. You know,
could be. There's an argument to just put Mizrowski in the highest leverage moments and go get us nine outs, go get us 12 outs, especially when you have Peralta starting and you could have Woodruff starting, and I don't know, maybe Quinn Priester, or piece some things together another way. But
yeah,
the path currently seems to be they want him to start.
I think if he's going to be relieving in the playoffs, it's going to be only on the table if the unlikely thing happens, and that's the Brewers remain this healthy in their rotation going into the postseason, that they have both Peralta and Brandon Woodruff available to them, and Quinn Priester is at full strength and still, you know, doing what he's doing. Like, you're going to need Cortes, you know, you're going to need everybody at full strength, and then, like, well, maybe with Mizrowski we can let him kind of cook on the back end and see, or even in the middle relief. I mean, we saw that in like the 2019 wild card game where Strasburg came in for Scherzer, you know, like when all hands are on deck, that's a handy one on deck. So I could see that happening, but I don't know. I also feel like a lot of things have to go right for that to happen. Speaking of the youth, a player who's younger by a couple of years than Jacob Mizrowski, Jackson Chourio. This is the quietest 20 game hitting streak in baseball history, in my opinion. I this is what happened to me a few nights ago. My son, who is 13 and pays attention and is irritating if you get a fact wrong, he will let you know. He said, well, Chourio's got a 17-game hitting streak. And I said, I don't think he does. I would know if he had a 17-game hitting streak. And we looked it up, and sure enough, he had a 17-game hitting streak. Now, that is up to 20 as of Sunday. I believe only six other players in Brewers history have accomplished a 20-game hitting streak. Of course,
Six times. Speaking of people that are annoying, and
well, I forgive my son for being annoying, because he was absolutely right, because I had no idea. I follow this team and it just for some reason took that long to register with me that he had a hitting streak that prominent, and he's crushing during the hitting streak. He is not just, You know, he's not really just getting a light single here and there. He looks great. This is the Churio we saw last year. Another great day on Sunday. He did hit one of the two home runs this week. Great. Somebody homered. It was a game tying homer, no less. This feels like last year, right? I mean, where you saw him, you know, the gears start to turn and things really start to take off.
Yes, it absolutely does. There's a little last year was, it seemed like more of a breakout. This feels like more of like this is who he is, which is, I guess, kind of exciting if you're the Brewers, because we were joking in the press box today. We were counting the number of hitters left until Churio came back up so they could try to score another run. And so legitimately, that's how they scored their first two runs. It's because they got the order back to Churio. And even though he made a base running blunder, that ended up giving them their run because, like, Perkins stole second, which is why it's not a good base running move. You don't want to get thrown out at third there. But that's why it's not the worst thing in the world to take that risk late in the game, because you can just have a guy steal second and he gets the spot anyway. But it felt like we were getting to the point where it's like, just like, you got to get 11 to the plate, because he's the only guy that's not going to get a hit. The only guy that's going to hit a ball in a gap somewhere or drive it over the fence. No one else is going to do that right now. And Yelich almost did. And Andrew Vaughn hit a couple balls, really hit the two hardest hit balls of the day. So obviously and Isaac Collins, that bats are incredible, just like super high quality. But yeah, it felt like Churio was going to have to do it all himself. And he did most of it himself. He looks really good. He's just in a great spot with his swing right now. And, you know, there's good reason to expect him to be really good the last 2 months of the season.
Marlins elected to intentionally walk him. Brilliant move. That was an obvious call for Blake Perkins there in the ninth inning on Sunday. Perkins comes through with a single to the wall. The always bummer in the box score, RBI single, when in reality Perkins smoked that thing. Maybe if the outfielder's playing at normal depth, it's just a sacrifice fly. But it was probably a double at the very least. I got to talk about this alumni home run derby. You were there. I wish I had been. I was literally at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa, while this was going on, trying to follow some of it. My son was in a skills competition that night for his tournament. By the way, did very well. They won two of their three games. It was quite nice. Trying to follow it, I wasn't able to really get a good handle on it. Pretty much it was just through tweets and various other communications. Keon Broxton comes through as the big winner. Corey Hart shows out in a massive, massive way. We got home runs from just about everybody in the field, including Nigel Morgan and Yovani Gallardo. We did not get a surprise CC Sabathia appearance. Of course, I did not expect that. It is Hall of Fame weekend. I am sure he was already in Cooperstown. Would have loved to have seen him take some swings. Speaking of Brandon Woodruff, would have loved to have seen him take some swings. Ricky Weeks, it would have been great, but obviously these guys are busy. It looked like to me that they just completely pulled this off, that it was a tremendous moment, really brightened everybody's spirits after a loss, after a tough loss to the Marlins. And I don't know if they could replicate it, but it honestly looked like just absolute joy, sellout crowd, everything clicked for it. I think the Brewers might've crushed this one. I mean, you were there. Tell me the vibes.
The vibes were great. It was an awesome event. We got to give it up to the Brewers for this one. It's going to be difficult to replicate, I think, because while you used up all of the guys that you would use in this pool, even Yovani Gallardo, you dipped into the pitchers that everyone wants to see hit. So I don't know how often you can pull it off, but man, it was really, really awesome. Sellout crowd, and I would say 37,000, 36,000, 37,000 at least. Stayed for most of the home run derby and then slowly trickled out toward the end as they kind of did the championship round. But like almost everyone was still there for the very end. I left maybe 30 minutes after the final homer was hit, and the traffic was horrendous getting out of the park. It was a smash. It was a home run, JR. It was a home run.
Grand slam.
We all should have seen Keon Broxton coming, because like the dude was just playing indie ball very recently,
years ago, 2023. He's still playing indie ball.
He's in his mid-30s. He's super athletic, and don't forget, he's always had pop. He has always had pop. He came around at the start of the Baseball Savant, the Statcast era, which was the beginnings of us being able to see what exit velocities and such and all that stuff. Like, and he hit the ball hard, which is why dinguses like me were believers in Keon Broxton heading into the 2017 season. We're like, this guy is like the Brewers' best player. And I mean, he was okay in 2017, especially like when you factor in his defensive stuff, JR. But second half of 2016, he hit .294, OBP .399, slugged .538, .937 OPS, hit 8 homers, 9 doubles, stole 16 bases, only caught stealing 3 times. That's in Monster. 46 games. And then he hurt his wrist, I believe, at the wall in Wrigley. Why do we have Ivy? Stop. Let's stop this. We're being like, put pads around.
Nostalgia and like you connection can't. To the past.
But whatever. It's fine. It's cool. It's great. I love it. Broxton got hurt, and I don't know if it derailed his career. Probably not, but he was incredible in the second half of 2016. So it was kind of funny just to see Prince and Braun and Hart and all these other great Brewers, and then Carlos Gomez and the guy who wins the home run derby.
If you were asked to name all the Brewers who had 20 home runs in a season, I don't know if how many people would think of Keon before now. Now they would, but like Chris Carter would probably come up before Keon Broxton, Aramis Ramirez. Like, there's a lot of guys that are that would come up before you get to Keon. But he did. He hit 20 homers in a season, and they were earned. He hit some bombs. Love the coordination here, where he takes his last homer, 435 feet. These are not cheapies. I did not think they were. I thought these were going to be mostly wall scrapers in this home run derby. They were not wall scrapers. These dudes were hitting bombs. And he trots around the bases and does Prince Fielder's famous bowling ball celebration, guys falling backwards. I would add much better coordination this time around compared to that moment in 2009, which when I spoke to Prince Fielder, you heard it on this podcast. That's kind of the homer he thinks of when he thinks of like the great homers he hit as a Milwaukee Brewer. He thinks of that bowling ball celebration, you know, and it was really a great idea, but like it was a little more of a cascading effect than what we had this time. Great visuals, great everything, the joy on these guys' faces. The love that they got, you know, Brewers. I don't know if I will buy that Milwaukee fans are inherently just a better fan base than other fan bases. Every fan base has its diehards and its people, and it's, you know, the people that guys really root for and the guys who can drink for free forever in these cities that have pro sports. But Milwaukee really does love its guys.
I think that's the point to make here is Keon Broxton and Casey McGee and Giovanni Gallardo hold a very special place to a lot of people. And like the Brewers haven't won anything. And so you don't have that to hold on to, but you have these guys. And it was just the perfect event. Someone was like, this is for all the oldies love this. And I'm like, no, this is, if you're a guy or a gal aged 25 to 49, these are your, like, it's not Bermitz, it's not Jenkins was there, but it's not Jenkins. Like, these are your guys.
That's right.
This is it. Mark Loretta was there, but it's not about you.
it's not about you.
It's about Keon Broxton.
Dang right.
It was just an awesome event. The only qualm I have with it is Randy Wolf and George Kitaris were not only announced with two people in between them before the game, is they were not announced together. That was that was the only qualm I had. They needed to have those guys take the field together.
I would have adored if they had just done that and not explained it. Just like, here's Randy Wolf and George Kitaris. You know, like
I didn't film much before the game because I was in the press box and I was working. I filmed a Braun. I didn't end up posting it, but I filmed the Braun intro, and then I had my phone out ready for that. And they let me down. I was ready to send that video out. And sure enough, it was just George Kitaris by himself. Elite guy remembering, though.
Elite guy remembering. And of course, George Kitaris was Randy Wolf's personal catcher, essentially. Although they were very, very quick to say he's not a personal catcher. That's not how it works. But like, when George Kitaris played, it was because Randy Wolf was pitching. That's how it was. All right, what a great week. Great week of Brewers baseball in terms of just stuff going on around the team, trade deadline. You know, they had the winning streak. You had Jackson Chourio kicking butt, Brandon Woodruff, the alumni home run derby. But there's still more granular details to go over, and that's what we're going to do. It's our weekly segment looking back at the week. Here it is, 3 up, 3 down.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get us going, Kurt, or I got one otherwise.
When are we going to do trade names? When are we doing that?
Oh, where we just like randomly, spasmodically say names and hope that one of them is correct? Is that what you mean?
Let's hold off on that. Let's do
that's fine. That's fine. Jake Bird. I went back and listened to last year's episode, and we said like 15 to 20 names. I actually kind of stopped counting.
We didn't get Nick Mears.
Zero. Well, no, Nick Mears actually in that case had already happened. So I don't blame us for that. It's Savali, Aaron Savali, which good. He's having a time in Chicago. Frankie Montas, I think, was the only kind of deal left on the table when we had that podcast. So I don't really feel terrible about not saying his name, but you know, you never really know what. One of these days, we are going to hit on a trade name, or even a preseason free agent signing, and we're going to be so proud of ourselves.
We hit on Hoskins.
Was that how we worded it, or was it more like it would be nice if they would, but they never will? I don't know. I don't remember Hoskins. You're right. We had some inclination.
What say you, A. Eugenio?
There he is.
I'll start, JR.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Go ahead. You talk.
Okay. Isaac Collins slide.
Oh, it was so good.
The Mariners. It was so good. So I've been doing this thing recently when I'm not covering the game. I don't have a way to watch the game on my phone. Yep. Dang it, Kyle, lost my subscription. I just watch it on my computer usually. But I don't want to always be on my computer. So I don't need to follow every pitch, but it's nice to be involved, especially when, you know, the Brewers are streaking towards mediocre at best burgers. So mm-hmm. I've had a bunch of the games, at least on this Mariners trip, I'd watch it on my phone on the MLB app. And it's not the actual game, but it is a 3D live animated version of the game, which is essentially, for me, it's the game, and you can, you know, get the audio with it. I'll put it on the screen, JR, so you can see it. This thing right here,
right for the audio medium. Oh, that's interesting.
Perfect. Yeah, so you can see it at least. And the Isaac Collins slide on this medium was incredible. I was like blown away. I had no idea if he was safe or out because the umpire like wasn't in the picture. It's not perfect. But I was like, he's got to be safe. Look at that slide. And then I saw the video and it was a little less cool, but still really awesome.
Very, just a guy who does, perfect Pat Murphy player. He just does.
We should talk to Isaac Collins more. He's the rookie of the year.
He might be the rookie of the year. Listen,
I think he's the rookie of the year. I think he is.
Okay. Well, I think that's insane because he will never win over Jacob Mizorowski. Two guys on the same team. One has all the buzz. One has none of it. Jacob Mizorowski is going to win on buzz alone, but you and I both agree there is a probably safer case for Isaac Collins to be National League Rookie of the Year than there is Jacob Mizorowski.
National League in F4 for rookies.
I know. You don't have to convince me. I mean, we're talking about an elite defensive player who occasionally makes some weird defensive plays, I would say, but still, he's got good base running. He's just really good at the plate. Like, he has long at bats. He has good bat to ball skills. There's just no way to me that he wins the rookie of the year. But if, say, they try to limit Mizorowski's workload and it just becomes untenable, there's just no candidates in the National League. There's just not guys. Augustin Ramirez, who you saw this weekend, Drake Baldwin, who is a part-time catcher with the Braves. Part-time is a little unfair, but still, he's not playing every single day. Isaac Collins is pretty much playing every single day, and he's doing something every night. It's crazy what he's able to do. He's been a really fun player. He's a fun player. You know, he's still falls in the camp of, at some point you'd like the guys to bring home the bacon versus guys who just like grind and play the right way, so to speak. But like, he sure does everything right, you know, so it's pretty impressive. My number one is talking about an article, actually. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic kind of gave Mark Adonazio the business a little bit. This is not a new move from Ken Rosenthal. He is very much, and I would say, a camp that I would kind of share, like, get out and spend, go out there and get your guys, do what it takes to help your team win. Don't try to reinvent the wheel, like in a crafty sort of, sort of garage sale like way. Those are not his words, but I'm just paraphrasing. He basically said, Mark Adonazio, open up the pocketbook, get out there and spend in terms of capital. I think he even meant free agency, really, but like in terms of where we are with this trade deadline, get out there and make the big move, go get Suarez. But
this was weird to me. Yeah. Go ahead. No,
yeah. No, you talk about it. You talk about it. I want your take on this because
this was weird to me.
Yeah.
Because the one you've got to be talking to is the Brewers front office.
That's right.
Adding Suarez's contract is like, you can be the biggest hater of Brewers ownership. And you would have to realize that is not something that is consequential to them in this season. Like, sure, 4 or 5 million, and when it's not in the offseason budget, is not necessarily something like they're quick to spend. We talk about that on this podcast all the time, JR. They don't spend much money, but it has never like stopped them from adding someone at the deadline. The hater trade was not about the money. It just wasn't. They ended up getting, because they took salary back. They ended up paying the same amount of money. It was a front office thing. They thought it was a wise move, and it kind of, you can math it out, whatever. That's about the Brewers front office having their prospects and having, like, you can't have it both ways. You can't write stories praising the Brewers doing this year in and year out, and then hammer them for keeping that approach for 12 months. Go ahead. If you can hammer them for doing that if you want.
No, I think the only delineation that I think is safe to make is you found a way for the first 4 months of the season to win and put yourself into the position where you can really start talking about yourself as a playoff team. That's fine. The next 2 months are about building a playoff team. Actually do something where you can greatly increase your chances to succeed in the postseason. I don't think he was necessarily making that argument, but like right now, I mean, the Brewers kind of have to collapse to miss the playoffs. They're kind of on that trajectory, you know, safely on that trajectory. So I guess like I could see somebody saying, all right, regular season's over, guys. You did it. Good job. You're in position. Now fix it so that you can actually compete in the postseason. But then it gets into like small samples and all that.
And yeah, that's what makes this murky. Do you trade for Ryan O'Hearn to give you like one war the rest of the year from Ryan O'Hearn? Would be pretty good, right?
Right. Yeah.
How does that increase your championship probability? Not much.
Nope.
Not a ton. Maybe this year is the year where it does enough because it is the difference between winning the division and getting a wild card. And like you've just had enough of these quick exits where you just feel fed up and want to try something else. Like maybe, yeah, get a control sample out there. We have seen what it's like when you kind of add around the fringes, but we haven't seen what happens when you go out and make a splash. But ultimately, JR, when you look at teams that make these splash deals at the deadline, it's not often that you feel great about it if you are the team getting the win now player. I think that's the fact of it, and that needs to be discussed. And you have to have that in the back of your mind. And I think that is also what will make it difficult for the Brewers to like walk that thin rope that they need to walk for this next week, because they need an upgrade. You need someone. You need a big bat. Oh yeah, but also be careful. Be careful, because you don't want to ruin this. You have a good thing going. Like you should be good next year, and you should be good the year after. And eventually, one of these years, the dam is going to break. And suddenly the balls are going to fall in your direction and you're going to go to the World Series, theoretically, right? Which is what makes this the stupidest sport on earth, because we don't know. Like if this is the Bucks, you just trade Eric Bledsoe. Go get Drew Holiday. Are you kidding me? You like your playoff shortcomings are clearly roster shortcomings in basketball.
Yes.
It feels that way in baseball. And I think to a degree it is with the offense. But your roster short, like it just doesn't work that easily because
there's not five players on the floor.
It's not, and you can't just trade four first round picks that aren't going to matter.
That's right. That's right. You have a depth situation with the farm system that you just don't have in other sports. So like you have to calculate how those things can help you and where you weaken those. It's a complicated puzzle. All right. You're up for number two. What do you got?
Can the Brewers steal bases?
It sure doesn't seem like it. They lead the league with 39 caught stealings.
Four they did more get a, than number they two. Got a, they got a huge one on Sunday. Blake Perkins comes off the bench and steals second, and that run ended up being Well, maybe it didn't end up mattering because
probably scores anyway.
Marlins would have put their closer. They didn't have the closer in the ninth. So who's to say? But it ended up mattering to tie the game at the very least, because the stupid two out ground rule double would have kept Blake Perkins from scoring from first on Andrew Vaughn's hit. But he stole second.
Go ahead. Well, I mean, you brought up the point on Blue Sky, I believe. Did Perkins stealing cause the outfield to have to come in a little bit to guard against that like game tying single and allowed Andrew Vaughn to loft one over the center fielder's head? Maybe.
I thought that ball was caught just because he hit it so high. And fly balls that are hit to center, fly true fly balls, they get caught. You don't see many ground rule doubles to center field anymore, just with the way that outfields play. But they get thrown out a lot. They're almost up to last year's total of 41 stolen bases. And yet they're still, if you look at Fangraphs, they're still the best base running team in baseball.
Yeah.
It's because they take the extra base every single time. And when they get thrown out at the plate, it's on the contact play. They don't get thrown out at the plate. Like they don't on when they're scoring from second. When's the last time you could think of a Brewers player being thrown out from the outfield at home plate? It just doesn't happen.
I agree with you. It is an important distinction to make. They are a good base running team. It's just stolen bases doesn't really seem to be where that's manifesting. And who's got the numbers are the Chicago Cubs. They've stolen as many bases as the Brewers. In fact, they've stolen one more, and they've been thrown out 17 fewer times. And there is a pretty clear-cut name that I think of when I see that disparity, and that's Quentin Berry, the former first base coach who is an expert at stolen base minutia. He is now with the Chicago Cubs. And boy, howdy, does it sure feel like that's pretty reflected in the stats. Obviously, we have no idea. It's very difficult. You know, stolen bases is an art form. It's not about one person. But I really think Quentin Berry is missed here in this particular skill, this one particular skill. And that's just not getting thrown out, stealing bases. Like, it's happening all the time. It was like twice in a game, I think, earlier in the weekend against the Marlins in big spots. Like, they just haven't been able to do it the same way they were last year. It's tough. My number two, though. Aaron Ashby picked off two runners in an inning. Speaking of... it was interesting, though, to have... they had to review Xavier Edwards on review. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Can we play audio from postgame right here? I'll send it to you to splice it.
Okay. You go ahead. You send me that file, and we'll see if I can figure it out. What do you got?
I'm going to... I guess I can't play it through because I can't find it right now.
No, you can do it. You can do it later. We'll splice this in. It's going to be beautiful.
Okay,
beautiful.
Talk about Aaron Ashby and I'll find it.
Aaron Ashby. He's been struggling, to be quite honest. He was so good. I don't think people understood how good for a long time. And then he kind of over the last 3 to 4 outings, it's gone pretty downhill. But he did, over the course of one batter, put out two guys. He picked off, was it Dane Myers, who was at second base, and he got him out. And then Xavier Edwards got caught leaning, and he, you know, threw over there and ended up, it looked like Xavier Edwards was safe, but on review we discovered otherwise. He was out. So two runners picked off over the course of one batter. That is a good way to end an inning. Well done, Aaron Ashby.
This was one of my favorite postgame moments of the year, as you can tell by me chuckling like a delinquent. Here we go. I think you'll be able to hear it if I put up to the mic.
Okay, let's do it.
Ashby kind of ended that rally with just getting guys on the bases. What makes him such an effective guy in terms of those pickups?
He's done.
Okay.
I don't know if you noticed it, but he's possible.
He can. There you go. But you had the alertness to know when to throw it to set.
You have to do that.
Okay.
Strike that from the record.
Okay.
Next question.
He's not. I almost fell backwards out of my chair. Like, I knew as soon as the question started getting asked by our guy Steve McGarry from the AP, I knew Murph was going to come up with some wisecrack answer, because like Aaron Ashby almost hit for the cycle in terms of bad throws to bases over the weekend. He had terrible throws to three of the bases.
It was wild.
And that answer just it sent me
incredible stuff. So,
very rare to see it though.
Yeah, for sure. All right, you got number three. What do you got?
Let's cap it off, JR, with some Joy Ortiz positivity.
Oh, interesting. Not where I thought we were going.
his defense remains pretty solid. He had a few days stretch there between Seattle or between LA on Sunday where oh my goodness, that ninth inning in the final game in LA was as good of defense in a clutch spot as you will ever see. And then kept it rolling Monday with a just as amazing of a play to rob Julio Rodriguez of a hit. I believe it kept the Mariners off the board, kept them from rallying. Ashby was pitching in the eighth inning. Just a fantastic up the hole spinorama play. And he almost made another one over the weekend against Xavier Edwards, but Xavier Edwards is Julio Rodriguez is fast too, but Xavier Edwards is really fast. And I think he was running from the left side as well. So
yeah,
he's still mostly doing it on defense. The reactions are a bit slow and like going back on pop flies is not his strength. There was a play in, I think it was the eighth, right after Terang had gone to the outfield. Yeah, it was the eighth inning. There was a bloop single and Terang didn't ultimately get there, but the way he jumped for the, like his jump for the ball, his read, it looked like he was shot out of a cannon compared to Ortiz. So I don't know. Like Terang probably would have better range, I think, than Ortiz, but Ortiz's hands and his arm have been incredible.
Yeah, he still makes those great plays. It's not good enough to offset the offense. You know, and I've said this, I think, last week. It feels like a yo-yo. One podcast, it's like, Joey Ortiz is back. It's going to be great. And then the next podcast is, do they have to move on from him completely? This is more closer to the latter. He's, you know, he just turned 27 years old. He's, I don't know how much more, you know, I wouldn't be advocating that they cut ties with Joey Ortiz, but like, that's why it's curious to know if there is a solution, what you were talking about earlier, whether it's Durbin or Terang over there, and then Durbin to second base, and maybe you get a third baseman. Like if there's a solution where they don't use Ortiz, that's probably the one that they would be interested in pursuing. I mean, how many times, Kurt, has he been taken out, Sunday included, taken out offensively late in the game? Because they clearly don't trust him to be in a big spot offensively. On Sunday it was like the seventh inning. Like there's a lot of defense left to be played at that point.
Jack Stern. Well, I think we were all calling him, but Jack Stern, I'd give him the shout out because he said it first. After Ortiz had a terrible at bat to strike on the fifth inning, he's like, well, his day is done. Anthony Siegler's going to pinch hit for him in the seventh. And sure enough, Anthony Siegler pinch hit for him in the seventh. I looked it up. If they had lost today, it would have been the eighth straight loss where Joey Ortiz did not play the complete game.
Man.
They're just lifting him every time they're down. And I mean, the bat's been bad, so you can understand it.
Yeah, that's real tough. My number three, Andrew Vaughn. Pretty simple stuff. He has another big day with the ground rule double that ties the game. How Johnny on the spot has he been? 14 RBIs in 13 games. He had the home run on Saturday night. I will go back to this well in this question. If you think there is any sign, because, you know, I still probably just feel like Andrew Vaughn is riding a hot streak, but he wouldn't be the first Chicago White Sox player to come over to a new organization and actually start to figure some things out offensively. That's not the forte of the Milwaukee Brewers, but he has looked so good that at some point you start asking yourselves, is this like for real, for real? Like, is he the answer at first base? I don't think, if I had to guess, you're not there. I'm not there yet, but, starting to ask that question. Is there any sign of that, Kurt? Do you think this is like for real, for real?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know.
I want to believe, like Fox Mulder on The X-Files. Shout out to my 90s friends. I want to believe. Here are the things we did not talk about on 3 Up, 3 Down. There's many, many of them. Jared Koenig, by the way, national anthem stare down with Brian Wu of the Seattle Mariners. I believe that was Tuesday night. We haven't had one of those in a long time involving the Brewers. You see them from time to time. He was hanging out on the line as long as possible. Unfortunately, Brian Wu wins the stare down. Koenig eventually did retire to the dugout. They had to start playing the game, but that was fun. JP Crawford by the Mariners, shortstop, the poor guy. Like, it was just a bad series for him. He didn't hit the ball. It seems like every time the Brewers hit a ball to him, he couldn't quite make the play, whether it was an error or just a hard hit ball. It was just real tough for JP Crawford, and that plays into why, like, they can have a game like they did Wednesday where they had 17 hits, and I still feel like it's just, and they went 10-2, but it's like, but they kind of just got some breaks. Like, the Mariners just didn't play good defense and they had a lot of singles that found holes, and like, that's how they win games. And I'm not disparaging it. It just doesn't feel like something that's going to carry them all the way through. But still, JP Crawford, tough scene. I think he has gotten better since then. Christian Yelich has been really rough. Christian Yelich, William Contreras as well. Yelich's last home run is July 11th. That's not that bad, but he's got a 665 OPS in July, so it's been a bit of a struggle for him. William Contreras hasn't homered. He's homered once since May 23rd. June 14th, you have to go back to find his last home run, 625 OPS. I kind of start to, like, is the finger really the problem? Because they are so unwilling to put him on the injured list that I'm starting to wonder if it's like... Well, you would think, right? You would think maybe there's more to it. Maybe he's just really struggling, because I just don't get it. I don't get why they wouldn't put him on the injured list. Give him 2 weeks to at least try to heal up and see if that improves things. I don't know. Ortiz has a 634 OPS in July too. It's not like anyone is, you know, anyone is really mashing the ball individually, but they're getting it done. Well, Churio is. They're getting it done. It's interesting. A lot of tough numbers from some of their best players. Maybe they turn a corner when it matters most. We could certainly see that, and that would change things quite a bit. And the last thing I didn't mention, Hall of Fame weekend. A lot of Brewers, a lot of Wisconsin connections in the Hall of Fame weekend. Of course, CC Sabathia, pitcher in 2008. You may have heard of him. He goes into the Hall of Fame. Dave Parker, who was with the Brewers in 1990, he posthumously goes into the Hall of Fame. And Tom Hamilton, Cleveland Guardians announcer, he is a Wisconsin native. He's a long, long time Cleveland announcer. He also the Ford C. Frick winner going into the Hall of Fame. Well, recognized by the Hall of Fame as the sort of the announcer this year. That's going to do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. Let's go back in time. Let's go back in time.
Do you remember?
Do you remember? It's our weekly segment, Remember When. You know, Kurt, you mentioned last time how you are sick of hearing about the 1987 team or the 1982 team, and that would be fair. I think at some point, people are going to be awfully sick about hearing about the 2008 team, a team that did not even advance out of the first round of the playoffs.
No. That's where you are wrong, my friend. We don't talk about them enough.
You're right, Kurt. We need to talk more about 2018. Well, truly a magical season.
Here's the problem. We talk about the same couple of things with them. We don't talk about, like, Mike Rivera's three-run double against the Nationals.
Washington. I remember
that. That Gabe Kapler walked off. We don't talk about that. That's our problem. That's society's problem. We get stuck on these 1-2. Oh, CC Sabathia threw 7. No. Talk about opening day. Talk about how Mike Cameron was unavailable. And Tony Gwynn. Craig Counsell, someone came through with a big hit. David Arisky had a big inning. That's about right.
And it was raining. Mike Rivera, who probably played less than George Gutierrez did. He, of course, did have that big home run in Washington that only you and I remember, but I remember it very well. I also, what was the other reference you made that I remember? Oh, Gabe Kapler. That was a huge rally. It was like all singles and walks and craziness. They were down, I think, 3 runs. Kapler topped it off. A lot of 2-out magic, that one. I was in the upper deck. I enjoyed that one quite a bit. Great season. Wonderful season. But we are going to talk about CC Sabathia because he is now inducted into the Hall of Fame, and it's the trade deadline season. So that kind of converges here. We've talked plenty about Sabathia's starts at the end of the season, the short rest, the Chicago Cubs, all that. We did all that. But this is his first start, July 8th, 2008. He had been traded, acquired by the Brewers well before the trade deadline, July 7th, the day before. And he said, I want to pitch. I want to pitch right away. Because if he had pitched, he pitches that Tuesday, the Tuesday after he's been acquired, one day later. And that means he can pitch twice before the All-Star break. And then again, in the first game after the All-Star break, the Brewers, they won all three of those games. All three of them were entertaining and for their own reasons. I would say the home run that Sabathia hit against the Reds in what became, a 2-1 walk-off win. Craig Counsell with the big hit in that one, a big sack fly. That was a pretty cool one. But his first start is a night I will never, ever forget. An electric atmosphere at American Family Field. Sell out to see this Tuesday night game against the Colorado Rockies, where CC Sabathia makes his debut. He was not great, actually, in this game. This was not his best. He threw 6 innings. He allowed 5 hits, 5 walks. He actually, 6 innings. He only went shorter than 6 innings one time with the Brewers in his next 16 starts, which, you know, as part of the crazy whack-a-mole numbers that he put up with the Brewers that year. But the Brewers did win this game. They beat the Rockies 7-3. 42,533 people were there. The club had sold 70,000 tickets, which was three times the normal amount in the time that he had been announced as a new member of the Milwaukee Brewers. So not just for that game, obviously, but for the next few games. It became the most successful homestand gate in Milwaukee Brewers history, these games against the Rockies and the Reds. Ned Yost, who was manager at the time, said this was like opening day all over again, so it was a little tough to kind of get guys focused. Sabathia was still wearing his Cleveland cleats. They did not match his outfit because he had just been traded from the Cleveland Indians, the reigning Cy Young winner. Of course, the Brewers traded for him. You could read that whole oral history at jsonline.com if you'd like. We went behind the scenes with Doug Melvin and the many players who made that happen, including Matt LaPorta, who was one of the big prospect that went the other way. I enjoyed writing that several months ago, but that's still there for you if you'd like. Again, he makes this start so that he can make another one before the All-Star break. Sabathia laboring a little bit. There's this crazy moment in the sixth where he is kind of falling apart. The Brewers have a 4-1 lead. Matt Holliday singles. Garrett Atkins walks. Ryan Spielborgs walks. So it's bases loaded, nobody out. And your Vit Torrealba, future Brewer, hits a double. Hits a booming double. 2-run score. That makes it 4-3. Ryan Spielborgs pulls up lame. He has injured himself. He gets into third base safely, but he has to come out of the game. He cannot score. He would have scored easily, but he's like hobbled. So immediately the Rockies have to put in Scott Pesednik, your boy, Scott Pesednik, Kurt Hoag. I know. He's your guy. But he gets doubled off because Sabathia spears a comebacker off of, I think it was Jason Nix who was batting. Spears it, throws over to third, gets Pesednik way off the base, and that's it. That's a double play. Sabathia ends up striking out Brad Hopp, ends the inning. He screams into his glove. The Brewers are up 4-3. They end up adding on a bunch more runs and winning this 7-3, but it was just an electric, crazy, momentous night. Of course, Brewers fans had no idea at that point how momentous the 2008 season would become. A crucial run in CC Sabathia's career. Really, really. And Tyler Kepner captured this a while back at The Athletic. Is he a Hall of Famer without this run? I mean, impossible to argue because it's sort of a springboard to what comes next, to winning a World Series with the Yankees and maintaining that level of success. But there was something so special about that, obviously for Milwaukee, but for Sabathia too, for his career as well. So very cool to see him getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. A special place in Brewers history, always will be. And yeah, we'll see him on the Wall of Honor any as soon as the Brewers have an opportunity to bring him back for that. That'll do it. Any thoughts, Kurt?
We should. Good job plugging that story because I think that was one of our better stories that we've
done and I
this year.
I think so too.
It was a long time ago, and it's just so many perspectives. So we got Mark Shapiro, and it was just awesome. It was a good story. The 2008 CC Sabathia thing was a great story. Well, difficult to chronicle too because it's so chronicled.
Yes,
but I felt like we got a little bit here and there, and. And you spearheaded most of it. So good job to the bald man.
Yes, you got Shapiro, which was key. Zach Manassian, who is now general manager of the San Francisco Giants, was here. He has some great, great insights. This is great stuff. So please find that at jsonline.com. But now let's wrap this up the way that we do every week, Kurt. And that is with your take of the week. Here it is, Kurt Blanc.
Willie Castro.
I was going to ask if we're just saying some names. I love that. I love that for us. Keep going. I have to go back to my. Oh, Jaron Duran. I mean, that would be a big deal. That'd be a big trade if they got Jaron Duran.
But that would be right up the alley of what the Brewers would do.
Right.
I had Greg Soto on here. RIP. He got traded to someone else. I'm going to go Garrett Clevenger. What do you got on Garrett Clevenger?
Fantastic season for Tampa Bay right now. I want him in my fantasy league because he gets holds and he is very, very good. That is what I have in Garrett Clevenger. I have not thought of him as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers, but now I can see it. Obviously I would have said Ryan McMahon, but who's that guy? Who's bobbling? Who's that? Is that Suarez? How are you? We've said his name a lot. He's already in the books as a name that we have said, Kurt.
I think it's your turn still.
Oh. We've already said Ryan O'Hearn, so that one's off the board at this point. What about like Royce Lewis? Like,
no,
I don't.
They're trading low. They're selling too low on Royce Lewis.
They would be way, way too low. But could it? It's just all. It's always going to be somebody that no one is thinking about, that no one is talking about, and you could maybe
Steven Wilson.
Steven Wilson, who's he play for? Mm-hmm. I don't even know that name.
White Sox.
Oh,
he's a Sox.
What about Aaron Civale? Well, I just want to make you laugh. That's real funny. But what about Luis Robert Jr.? Luis Robert Jr. It should be
Robert. You're right. Cam Boeser.
Another name that I'm sure most people do not know. See, that's the thing. Of course, they're going to get a relief pitcher, right? They're going to get somebody that no one.
Can I actually give my name?
Yeah.
Dylan Lee.
Another player who was recently replaced on my fantasy roster by I didn't end up getting Garrett Clevenger. We went with JoJo Romero, but Dylan Lee no longer getting holds, but having a great year for the Atlanta Braves. Great year. I could see that, Kurt. The Braves, like, I think they've got to be one of the few teams that are actually selling. So like Marcelo Ozuna, I think at some point is going to be a really big, big guy. They wouldn't get in on Marcelo Ozuna, do you think? Right?
No, no. Okay. Ozuna from the Braves. No.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I had all my names piled up, and then I kind of lost them. You said Ha-Seong Kim earlier, so I don't feel like we can do that. Kurt, I'm struggling.
Austin Slater.
That could be an interesting one as well. I tried to find a move.
Moncada.
Why isn't Yoan Moncada on this team already? What happened there?
Because he
don't you
money.
Think that makes perfect sense? Yeah. What about
Brandon Lau?
You're kicking my tail at this. You are doing all the heavy lifting. I mean, I would have said Josh Naylor before he got traded. I tried to craft, and we did this at jsonline.com, where we sort of threw out a few trade offers, like pretended that there were some trade offers. And I threw out a bunch of names that I thought could work. I tried to find a Freddy Peralta deal, and I absolutely could not do it. I could not find a taker because I don't think they would trade him. Even in the scenario that they did, it wouldn't be to a National League team. And I could not find an American League team where it made sense to find a team that would be like, we want that kind of big league production, and we would trade somebody like a third baseman for that. It was really difficult. What about David Bednar? Would the Pirates deal with the Milwaukee?
Yes. Yes. Or David or Dennis Santana. He might fit the Brewers a little more because he's sinker slider.
Yeah, I agree. Dennis Santana is a big one. We said Jimmy Pete Fairbanks Herget? Last year. Oh, Jimmy Herget's Fairbanks. A good one. We said him Rays last do? Year. Whatever the Brewers do, because they have the same brain.
I can't believe they haven't traded Pete Fairbanks already. That's what surprises me.
We said his name last year, and boy, would he be fun. He is a personality. I would love to see him introduced into this clubhouse. But I don't know. Should have been traded last year, I think. How about Adolis Garcia? What are the odds on that?
Yes. Yes. Although, no, I don't think the Rangers do it.
I don't either. So that brings me back to another outfielder in Cedric Mullins. And this is a name that we've talked about.
That is a hard yes. Hard yes. Hard yes.
I think that's a good one.
Exactly the kind of player that works on this team. Sean Newcomb, Brock Stewart, Griffin Jacks.
Griffin Jacks has kind of struggled a little bit, has he not?
I feel like they could use another lefty, but I don't know. Like, unless the Royals aren't Clevenger, I guess. Unless the Royals aren't like trading Angel Zerpa, but I feel like they could use another lefty, even though they got Ashby and Hall and Koenig. Just feels like same thing with outfields. Like, yeah, you could probably use another one.
Yeah. How about Raisel Iglesias?
No.
You don't think so? No, me neither.
I don't think so. No.
How about Luis Urias? Oh, Taylor Ward's a good one.
Maybe. Luis Urias could be used as a fringe player.
You already said Ramon Urias as his brother. His brother with the Orioles. Yeah. How about a true favorite of this podcast, Harrison Bader?
Ooh, yeah. Yes, that would do it. That would move the needle. Yes,
I am going to drop my microphone on Harrison Bader. I feel like that's where it's going to end.
That's your best one, yet. What if I feel like I'm just going with throwing reliever darts out there? Burke. I'm going to end with Brock Burke. Can you tell me what team Brock Burke is on?
I can tell you what team Blake Burke is on. It's the Wisconsin Timberrattlers. I cannot. Tell That's, you anything about Brock Burke, but
that is where I am finishing.
I'm going to have to Google him. In the meantime, I'm going to say Kyle Finnegan's name, if only because the Brewers will be in Washington when this thing, assuming roughly in Washington when this trade deadline goes down, could have a clubhouse switching situation where Kyle Finnegan joins the Brewers, just hops across the way on and in Washington, D.C., and then comes home with Milwaukee. Brock Burke. That's a name you made up. Did you Frankenstein that from the names of other players? Or is he a real life? I'm assuming he's a relief pitcher.
He's a relief pitcher for the Los Angeles Angels.
Look at you, Brock Burke. That's fun. He's a lefty.
And most importantly, Eugenio is bobbling. He's bobbling up to the mic. He wants cheese curds. He does. You can see it in his eyes.
Brock Burke with 49 appearances this year, that leads the league. That is a lot of workload. Although only 42 innings pitched, him and Jared Koenig have some things in common here. 1.33 WHIP as well. That's
great.
Not ideal, but you never know. The Brewers,
I think they can get more out of him.
Right. Like when we have seen time and time again, if they're acquiring somebody, now the relievers have been bad, but I still believe in the Brewers' overall process when it comes to acquiring pitching talent. All right. That was a supersized episode of the podcast. We are going to wrap that up now and move into my conversation with Robert Murray. More trade deadline stuff. We cannot get enough of it. We will find out something. Maybe by the time you're hearing this on Monday morning, something will have been announced. It is always a possibility, but we have still a little more trade chatter here. And then we'll see. We'll see if we need an emergency podcast at some point this week to discuss whatever it is the Milwaukee Brewers do. If past history is precedent, there will not be an emergency podcast. But who knows? This year, this team, first place, tied for first in the National League Central, heading into a huge series this week with the Chicago Cubs. Tied for first place with these Cubs. It's going to be pretty, pretty full at American Family Field. Pretty awesome, I think. Followed by that series in Washington. Kurt, any last thoughts?
Bring it on.
Bring it on, Chris Paddock. That'll do it for this edition. Thank you for tuning in to Microbrew. We'll chat with you again very, very soon. Bye, everybody. My guest is Robert Murray, baseball writer, longtime baseball writer, been 10 years in the business now, as we discussed beforehand. More than that, also, he's a transaction extraordinaire. This is his time of year to shine. You've probably seen him on social media. He, of course, is a formerly with The Athletic, covered the Brewers for a short time. Sheboygan native Robert Murray. Robert, thank you for joining us, man. What is going on, buddy? Where are you? Where do you live now? Are you still in the state of Wisconsin, or have you broadened your horizons elsewhere?
I've left the great state of Wisconsin. I go back quite a bit to visit family, but now I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, a place that I've always wanted to live at, and have moved out here just for pure happiness reasons. But also, this is a really good place to network for baseball purposes. And yeah, just the best of both worlds have collided in Arizona, and now I'm here and in love and life. But it is good to be back here with you, JR, because I have missed you dearly. You and Todd Rosiak and Kurt, and it's a good squad you have over there. Also, shout out to Tom Haudricourt, by the way. Absolute G.
Yes, we are a good time at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I remember one of the rare road games I've gotten to cover in my time there was the 2019 wild card game in Washington. You were with me on that trip. That was fun. Had a good time. And I needed to pick your brain about this. But first, you've probably told this story a lot about how you got into the business and how you sort of found this non-traditional path toward being, I don't know if transaction guru sells you short, but this again is the time of year where you're breaking news left and right. And I don't know how that happened for a kid from Sheboygan. I mean, I can you give me a little bit of the origin story, the superhero origin story of how this worked out for you?
Yeah, I honestly, it kind of happened by accident. I created a Twitter account when I was 16 years old. I remember I was sitting on the couch next to my mom and dad, and I'm like, you know what? I just want to talk some ball with people. Made a Twitter account called @BigLeagueRumors and just started talking ball, sharing the transactions that were reported by Ken Rosenthal and John Heyman and Jeff Passan and those guys. Noticed I got a decent following, like maybe a few thousand people. Started reaching out to some folks. Initially got shot down pretty good. I was just asking for information immediately rather than trying to build a relationship. And then next thing I know, I kind of fell into the Billy Butler going to the A's scoop where he signed 3 years for $30 million. And the next day I was on MLB Network talking about how I broke it. I'm like, holy crap, this could end up being a career. This is something I'm super passionate about. And got connected with John Heyman and worked with him for a while. He's still a very good friend. I talk to him daily at this point. Got a job at The Athletic covering the Brewers, as he said, with Ken Rosenthal, and that was an absolute blast. And now it just it's turned into this beast of trying to break news often, and getting the Rafael Devers scoop this year was a blast. It was a lot of fun. It was exhilarating, and yeah, it kind of shut down baseball Twitter for a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. The Devers scoop was yours, and there has not been much movement since. But that's about to change because we're just a few days away now from the trade deadline, and the Milwaukee Brewers are in a really good place as we record this. They got the best record in baseball midweek, and I got to think they're going to be involved. But, you know, you never want to get too excited when the Milwaukee Brewers are involved because they tend to be a little conservative around the trade deadline, as fans here know. I have a feeling, just from a general sense, because you've kind of, I'm sure you've networked with every team in baseball with agents and players and everything else. I feel like when the Brewers make a move, it's usually kind of out of left field. It's a big surprise. It makes me think that they're about as hush hush as any organization in baseball in terms of, you know, like leaking information or letting people know they're thinking, so to speak. Since you know the other teams, do you agree with that? Is that just something that we perceive here in Milwaukee because we've been surprised a few times, or are they really legitimately one of the quieter teams, one of the harder teams to read this time of year?
They're definitely tough to read, and if you want to get an accurate read on the Brewers, you talk to people who have spoken with them, and they're not the most secretive team by any means, but they are secret. I would put the Atlanta Braves as the most secretive team for sure. Okay. They operate in silence, and they often drop the press releases about
are we getting breaking news now, Robert Murray, as we're talking?
Maybe.
Ooh.
But anyways, yeah, it's that time of the year.
Yeah, it is.
But no, they're the Braves are definitely the most secretive team. The Brewers are absolutely up there as well. And I mean, I got a sense in what they're looking at trying to do this year, but I don't necessarily have like who their prime targets are, which that also leaves a lot of mystery with what they're trying to do this year.
Well, tell us what you can tell us. And in addition to that, what you think of the Brewers in the current ecosystem? Obviously there's labor stoppage looming in a couple of years. The Brewers, if they go on and let's say win the World Series, which would first of all set this town on fire, but secondly would sort of be a proof of concept that a team that doesn't spend, that doesn't aggressively pursue free agents, and maybe doesn't even aggressively get involved this time of year either, can actually succeed. You know, that would probably lead me to think, well, the Brewers, why would they be aggressive? Because they've shown time and time again, they can compete in the regular season without making those big moves. But the other piece to that is, well, what about the postseason? They haven't done that. They haven't ever gotten that masher who could supplement the offense and maybe carry them for a playoff game or two. So obviously this all leads back to what you think they'll do. Are they going to just be the Brewers, or because they have this uniquely positioned team as good as any team in baseball, maybe they take some bigger swings this time?
To me, they need to take a bigger swing. This is such a unique opportunity for them. Like, if they could ever go back and, or if they could ever make a CC Sabathia like splash, it would be right now. They have such a nice core of players. They have Jackson Churio, who's ascending. Jacob Mizorowski is the next great thing in baseball. You don't know how long you're going to have Freddie Peralta. If you can go out and get an Eugenio Suarez, you can get a Ryan O'Hearn, or an impact bat like that, to me, that's a no-brainer. And that's something the front office should absolutely consider. But that being said, it all comes down to what Mark Antanasio is willing to let them do in terms of adding to the payroll. And the good thing for them now is you're acquiring them mid-season, so it's half of their salaries. But they should have the flexibility. Antanasio should open up the books and try to get – a player that can be impactful. That being said, you don't want to be stupid about giving up your top prospects, because the prospect hauls that are going to require to get some of these players is just going to be really high. But this is the year that they absolutely have to go for it. And if they don't, it would be a colossal failure by ownership. And it would signal to the fan base that, yeah, like we're comfortable with being good, but we're not willing to go the extra mile to win a World Series.
Man, interesting. And you mentioned Suarez. Eugenio Suarez is the biggest fish in this pond, it feels like. And that's why I've always thought the longer this goes along, the more I feel like, well, the Brewers aren't going to be in on him because everybody wants him. He is, if it's a position of need. And I just don't see the Brewers ever getting into a bidding war. Those prospects are very dear to their hearts, as you know. Would there be a scenario where you see that's the guy that maybe they chase after and they get that masher for the postseason?
No, I think they should chase after him. Whether or not they actually get him remains to be seen. My guess is that's probably unlikely. But he's exactly the kind of player that they should be targeting at this point. And he's got 35-plus homers this year. He's been phenomenal. And something that they really value in Milwaukee is clubhouse presence. I mean, you know that being around there. Like they, a lot of their locker room is just filled with really good people. And Suarez, his leadership is just regarded as some of the best in the game. And he would. It's difficult for players to be traded mid-season because there's just so much that comes with being traded in addition to like having to be with a new team. And he would be the kind of guy who has a history of doing so. He's used to it. And he could probably hit the ground running in Milwaukee. So, again, I don't think he's probably the most likely candidate by any means, but he is somebody who should, for every reason imaginable, be their top target.
You had mentioned Freddie Peralta, and it wasn't so long ago that Freddie Peralta was kind of one of the top trade targets on this market back when the Brewers were just another team. That doesn't seem very likely anymore. He is a guy that might still draw some interest, and the Brewers have dealt from their major league roster before. Now, maybe not that, you know, with the exception of the infamous Josh Hader deal, not the top of their major league roster before, but I tried to come up with a scenario where I could see them still trading Freddie Peralta and getting something pretty substantive back. I couldn't find a partner. I couldn't make that work. It was a really difficult thing to do for me as I was trying to like realistically chart that out. But do you think that scenario exists, that that they would trade a guy who is ostensibly their ace? I mean, they have a lot of great pitchers at this point, great depth, that they could move on from him knowing that they could get some big league return. Is there still that scenario where you think that makes sense?
You know, I think it would make sense, but that being said, they are pretty intent on having Peralta for the rest of the season. And Matt Arnold said as much to the Journal Sentinel. I believe he said it to Kurt.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a good job by Kurt on getting that one. And it makes all the sense because you want to have him during this stretch. Having him on your roster absolutely ends up giving you the best chance at advancing deep into the postseason and maybe even having a World Series or going to the World Series, I should say. And that Josh Hader trade, when they made that, it happened in Pittsburgh. And I remember talking to people, players, you name it, who were around that situation, and they were just blindsided. It sent shockwaves throughout that team that you could not, I don't think even the front office could have envisioned it. David Stearns even said as much as like he didn't exactly expect that kind of an impact from that trade. And to be fair, after that trade, they tried moving Estuary Ruiz, who they ended up getting for Hader, and they tried getting an impact bat. It did not end up working out, but they had visions of trying to do more. It did not happen. And I think they've learned from their previous mistakes. Matt Arlo was here when that all went down. But yeah, I don't envision Peralta being on the move now, but in the offseason, that could be a different story.
Oh, right. That's a totally different conversation. Did not know that about Ruiz. Of course, Ruiz is the key piece they moved to get William Contreras in the subsequent offseason. So it works out, but interesting. I didn't know there was maybe other things afoot that fell through there.
They were thinking big. They were definitely thinking big.
I'm going to put a pin in that because I want to get some of your stories from years past in a second, but just maybe anybody else, you mentioned O'Hearn, you mentioned Suarez, anybody else that you think a bigger fish that makes sense for this team, not even necessarily a corner infielder, like the shortstop situation has been a little bit fluid, although Jory Ortiz has played better lately. Is there anyone else out there that you think that's a guy the Brewers should be after?
Yeah. And it's a good question because the Brewers, as of this point, they're looking at three things. They're looking at upgrading the backup catcher position. They are looking for an optionable reliever, which is something that they love in that organization. And they are also looking for first base depth or just enforcements there. And what exactly that could look like, I don't know. O'Hearn would definitely like fit the bill of first base. Josh Naylor in Arizona is another candidate who is a first baseman, although I don't know what the Brewers' appetite would be there. But those are the areas that they're looking at. And to me, that if you're looking at those three areas, it's probably tough to end up getting an impact player there, especially because like the one that would scream to me, like you make a splash would be first base, but you have Rhys Hoskins on the roster. And unless you like don't have him on the roster, yeah, I just don't envision a big move there. So I don't know what they would be looking at, but that's the feel I have as of this point.
Yeah. Well, they don't have Rhys Hoskins right now. He's supposed to be back by September from his injury, but yeah, no. I guess you never know if that finger issue lingers. All right. So I mentioned this. Do you have any good stories from years past? Close calls. We learned a few weeks ago that the Brewers had made a play for Felix Hernandez back several years. I don't think we actually got an exact year, but it was as GMs were telling stories. Do you know of anything that you can share anyway that would, I don't know, make us raise an eyebrow or two from years past?
Yeah, actually, I'll share a Brewers beat favorite. Actually, this is well regarded at this point. But when the Brewers and the Giants made a trade, I believe it was 2018 or 2019, one of those years. I was under the impression that they were getting like Will Smith, or they were maybe even getting like a Bumgarner. Was it Will Smith? It was one of the better relievers that they had.
Could be. I mean, they themselves traded Will Smith, but that was back in 2016. I'm pretty sure there was a year where they were sellers.
Yeah. Sure. I think they were interested in trying to get him back. But anyways, I was under the impression that when the Brewers made the trade with the Giants, that it was a significant move. And I was thinking it was Bumgarner or one of those big guys. And I tweeted that the Brewers and Giants were in agreement on a significant trade. And all of a sudden I had Ken Rosenthal text me being like, what are you hearing? I'm like, I think it's one of these guys. And he then texted me saying it's Drew Pomeranz. And I'm like, oh no.
2019. Like, love that.
This is tough. I was wearing it, and I was getting flack like crazy on Twitter. It was tough. And I remember sitting in the press box that day, like that night after it all happened, and I had Todd Rosiak and Adam McAlvey tell me, like, you gotta lean into this, because this is really funny. And I did, and it was the best thing that I could have ever done. And I even had, after Pomeranz went on this huge resurgence in Milwaukee, like, he had a great ER. He was like an impact dude there.
It's incredible. Yep.
I even had Mike Fasalo, who's their lovely PR guy in Milwaukee, like, get at me on Twitter about it too, saying Drew Pomeranz has been a significant addition. I mean, it was really funny. So that would be my best one for sure. I probably got some other stories in the back of in the notebook somewhere, but as of this point, that's the one that kind of stands out to me the most.
Drew Pomeranz, like you said, went on to absolutely shove down the stretch. He was huge for the Brewers. He pitched great in the wild card game. He was absolutely a significant addition. Bob Murray, you were not wrong. Maybe early, but you were not wrong.
No, the crystal ball was telling me certain things. So that was big.
That's great. Yeah, the Brewers have not famously been great at reliever deadline pickups since Drew Pomeranz, although Nick Mears, I guess, after he was acquired last year at the deadline, kind of has a case. He's been pretty good for them. Anything else, Robert Murray, before I let you go, Brewers related, anything rolling around in your brain, anything that you're interested in seeing that might adjacently affect Milwaukee as we head into the trade deadline?
Yeah, I would look at what the Cubs do as something that's going to be really interesting for the Brewers. And the Brewers, if the Cubs end up making a big move, which I would not rule out by any means in the starting pitching front, that seems like something they're really intent on doing. That's not going to impact what the Brewers do. They're very process-oriented in Milwaukee, and they're not going to panic. They're not going to react to it. They're going to continue doing what they do. But again, this is the time. Especially now, coming off of that big win streak, you have the best record in baseball, being such a small market team, go make a splash. This is the time. Mark Attanasio, if you're listening to this, which you should be, this is your record, baby. this is the time to make a splash. Show that fan base you're very serious about winning, because, I mean, it took the front office kind of begging for money to get them to sign Jose Quintana this offseason, and that was for, what, $4 million with, like, $2 million deferred? So we'll see exactly how that happens, but this is the time to make a splash.
He is Robert Murray. You should absolutely be following him this time of year. Turn those notifs on, baby. By Robert Murray on Twitter, BY Robert Murray. You definitely are going to need to be following him as things unravel here over the next few days. Thank you so much, sir. We will chat with you again. Enjoy Scottsdale, Arizona. Great to talk to you.
No, I appreciate you having me. Thanks for all you do, man. You're a great dude, and I appreciate your friendship. Thank you.